Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Julie Douglas.
You know, we're in the studio here. We just recorded an episode on yoga and the benefits of yoga, the risk of yoga, a lot of the science that we find in yoga. And in that episode, we refer out to an additional episode, which we are recording now, Yoga, Sex, Magic, because there's a lot to be said about sex and yoga, about the sensual side of yoga, the sexual benefits of yoga, and its roots in mysticism and sensual experience.
And don't worry, we're not going to talk about Sting's sex life here, because he has often talked about tantric yoga, right?
Yeah.
As being a part of his...
Deal.
Yeah. Deal, yeah. I was going to say magic sauce, but that just doesn't sound right. But we are going to talk about... I guess some people would say it's yoga's dirty little secret, but the fact of the matter is that it has its roots in tantric yoga, which is associated with sexuality, as you say, and celebrating sexuality and a lot of mysticism too.
Yeah. So let's run back the clock here. Let's discuss ancient history. So Hinduism is the oldest of the dominant world religions today, and arguably the most difficult to summarize. Okay. The roots of Hinduism stretch back a good 5,000 years through the soil of human history. And that's soil that's just ripe with variations, with different important texts, poetic epics, sects, diversions, gods, goddesses, religious rituals. It's just there is an entire rich culture there around Hinduism. And any attempts to summarize it here would be incomplete.
It would be a podcast unto itself.
Yeah. But at its very nature, what does it propose to do? It aims to free the practitioner of Hinduism from something called the wheel of samsara. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've mentioned this before in terms of Buddhism. And, of course, there's a lot of crossover between Hinduism and
right.
Buddhism. Samsara is the endless cycle of death and rebirth that sees the human consciousness or soul flow and rise and fall through varieties of tragic, doomed, and ephemeral lives. It's the idea that it's not this sort of vague Western idea of reincarnation where it's like, oh, I'm not really going to die. I'm going to come back as a cat or something. That'll be great. And I'm not saying don't find some comfort in that thought.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of samsara is more that I'm going to continue to live lives that are ultimately going to be filled with pain in one way, shape, or another. Even the loftier, more pleasant lives that I live are going to end in death and may end up shooting me down to a lower level of existence. So I might be, and I'm borrowing more from some of the Tibetan Buddhist ideas here, but I might live life as a demigod in the next life and everything will be awesome, but I'll kind of be awful at the same time and earn myself a position in the lower hells in the life after that. So the idea is that you want to eventually rid yourself of this wheel, you know? It's kind of
it's a karmic wheel, really.
Yeah, it's kind of, think of it this way. It's like the person who's in one bad relationship after the other and they desperately want to free themselves of that cycle and mm-hmm. find a good relationship. That's kind of what we have here. And that good relationship, that liberation yeah. from the wheel of samsara is what Hindus call moksha, which means release or liberation. So this carnival ride sucks. I want to get off of it. That's what Hinduism is ultimately trying to do. And we might not do it in this lifetime or the next, but we need a game plan, right? So we get into something called trimarga, which is the three paths. So we have karma marga, the way of action, jnana marga, the way of knowledge, and bhakti marga, the way of devotion. So this is where yoga gets involved here. Yoga means discipline or regime or yoke, and it derives from the Sanskrit root for yoke.
Yoke, which also means union. You
know, yes.
And we talked about this in the other podcast, this union between mind and body.
Yeah, to use the centaur example again, instead of a mind riding the body, this man riding the horse, it is the man horse. It is the body, the body-mind union.
And this is where that intermingling of sexuality and spirituality happens as well. This is the same sort of yoke. And this is where we're really sort of driving the path toward tantra, right?
Right. So within Hinduism, the word yoga is often used interchangeably with marga. It involves far more than just poses. It includes meditation, fasting, various aesthetic practices, ethical behavior, intense study in some cases. And it's one of the six schools of orthodox philosophy and often just sort of a generic term for spiritual discipline. So just culturally, when you look at yoga in the East versus yoga in the West, there are a number of differences that arise. So let's talk a little about yoga in the path, because to really get into the tantra thing, we have to again get into examples of what is the yogi of 300 years ago like versus the yogi that you might
yeah.
find in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, I mean, even like in the 1830s, William J. Broad, who wrote The Science of Yoga, brings up Ramakrishna. And this was one of Hinduism's great modern saints. There's this idea that he was always in such a constant state of ecstasy. And we say ecstasy, we are sort of making a little hat tip here to orgasm as well,
mm-hmm.
Or at least a sense of transcendence. Le pit mort, as the French say, which is a little death. Right? Transcendence.
Yeah. And again, just to mention, the body-mind connection. And when we're talking about body and mind in a religious context, you can think of it, body and spirit. And so something intense that happens in the body, just by virtue of being intense, has to have a connection to the spirit as well. So
right.
It would seem obvious then that an orgasm would be of interest to someone seeking to understand the mind.
And you Where think it's weird that we're saying orgasm when we're talking about religion or just even meditating or being in a state of ecstasy mm-hmm. without some sort of, slap and tickle involved. We're going to talk more about that.
Slap and tickle.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that later and connect it all. But I did want to bring up Ramakrishna because apparently he was in such a constant state of bliss that he had assistants to tell him when to eat and breathe.
Wow.
So this is intense stuff. There is this intermingling of these two concepts of sexuality and mysticism or spirituality. And in Hinduism, this is not unusual. We usually think about our more Western religions and how these are mutually exclusive things. But this is not in some Eastern religions. And this is this idea, too, that the spiritual energy lies dormant at the base of the spine until it is activated and channeled upward to the brain to produce enlightenment.
Through the chakras, these various circles in the body mm-hmm. that through which the energy flows.
Right. So this state of ecstasy turns out to be a state of enlightenment.
Yeah. So yogis in centuries past, we mentioned this a little bit in the other podcast about yoga, but they might be holy men who would legitimately give you a little more insight into the spirit.
Create merkins out of their beards.
Yeah, they might be mystic carnies who would bury themselves alive for money. They might contort their nude, ash-smeared bodies in the street. They might smoke dope and kidnap children. They might run protection rackets, and some were capable of supposedly uniting the male and female aspects of the universe through sexual sensation. So they really kind of ran the gambit from really holy to really skeezy. That's one of the things that Broad really does a great job of pointing out, is that yoga is, especially historically, is so much broader than what you would encounter at the YMCA or the local yoga studio. That it runs the gambit between, like, just total enlightenment
right.
and madness, between between physical health and debilitating or life-threatening injury, and there's a rich world there, and out of that also comes this subject of tantric yoga and tantra.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring up hatha yoga, which we all, if you practice yoga, this is a branch of tantric yoga, and we'll talk a little mm-hmm. bit more about tantric yoga in a second. The tantric agenda, again, was reaching enlightenment as fast as you could. And William J. Broad brings up the fact that there's a 15th century book called Hatha Yoga Pradipika, and it instructs in poses, but also talks about stimulating genitals, right? Again, in this agenda to try to reach enlightenment. And one line from the book says, press the perineum, that's an erogenous area between the genitals and the anus, by the way.
Known as the taint in some circles.
Press the taint with the heel of the foot. Mm-hmm. It opens the doors of liberation. So, I mean, this is a specific text telling people, you know, how to proceed in this path of enlightenment, which has to do with sexuality.
Yeah, and if I'm remembering correctly, hatha means violent, not in the sense that it is violent yoga, in that it's like, you know, karate chops and stuff, but more about the speed and the intensity of getting there.
Right. This is a path to this enlightenment yeah. again.
So, Tantra.
Tantra. Tell us about Tantra.
This sexy side of yoga, but also the sexy roots of yoga. It rises to prominence within Hindu traditions in medieval India. So this is around the 5th century Common Era. But its mysterious roots may go back even farther into the past, into the practices and traditions of the Indus civilization, which would have been 3300 to 1300 BC. So the idea here is that the beliefs were present in this earlier culture, then they go underground for thousands of years, and then they evolve back up into practice in eastern and southern India. And Tantra is based on the Sanskrit word meaning that which extends knowledge. And it's the stated purpose of Tantra isn't sexual bliss in and of itself, but rather spiritual bliss and enlightenment, and ultimately moksha that we were talking about early.
Right.
Ultimately, the idea is to find liberation from this endless wheel of suffering.
And here's the other thing about Tantra, is that it does not subscribe to the caste system.
Right.
So,
and it was free then of the Brahmin priests that were ruling over it. It was open to men
right.
and women.
It's Muslim. Democratizing sexuality, but also spirituality. So it had a lot of people who were very interested in being a part of it. I guess you would say the problem, or as William J. Broad puts it, is that eventually it becomes so associated with sex that it's sort of overshadowed by this, and people begin to think of it as, okay, well, it's not just, you know, this spiritual awareness or enlightenment, but, you know, a lot of people are getting kind of randy here.
Yeah. Now,
and you know, squirreling away from the path.
Yeah. Now, why are they getting randy, or what is the stated reason? Well, historically, you had right-handed tantra and you had left-handed tantra, and that doesn't have anything to do with like right or left handed being bad or one being dirty that has to do with like the position of God and goddess, in typical iconography. But, right-handed tantra was more traditional in terms of like worshiping the goddess, whereas left-handed tantra involved the ritual use of taboo items in Hinduism, specifically these five M's. You had masma, which is meat, matsya, fish, mudra, parched grain, which was seen as an aphrodisiac, madhya, which is wine, and then mathuna, ritual sexual intercourse. So what you would have happen is you would have this group of individuals, and generally these are people that already have some exposure to yoga or to yoga principles. This is not just random people on the street. They come into a sacred space in the presence of some sort of a guru or an adept, and it'll be on an auspicious day. You know, that's something that lines up numerologically important in the tradition. And you'll have male and female participants who were called tantrikas, ritually bathe, dress, and generally, doll up and purify through meditation and reciting mantras. And then they form into male and female couples. Then they consume these various things ritually, have a little meat, a little fish, a little parched grain, a little wine. And then they will unite sexually.
Then it becomes a key party.
Well, no. I mean, that can be the charge, but it's not just like, all right, we're done with the meat and the fish. Let's get down to business. There's also a lot of the mantras continue and the meditative aspects continue, and in fact, it's the pronunciation of the mantras supposedly turns the female partner into an embodiment of the goddess, and the male becomes an embodiment of the god. So on a mythic level, they're enacting the cosmological union of Shiva and Shakti, of Deva and Devi, and it takes on this larger cosmic proportion. And again, it involves intense meditation, intricate yogic postures, the visualization of these yantras, which are kind of like a mandala that represents divine female energy, kind of this geometric design that you envision in your head, and the attempt to stay immobile and to facilitate mental processes in the prevention or delay of orgasm.
Well, and this is something we'll talk about a little bit too, this delay of orgasm, which is also extending the enlightenment period, right? This ecstasy. So this is when I brought up Sting, I brought up this idea that you could do breath work, you could do meditation in order to stave off the inevitable, so to speak, before you get the lapite mort.
And they're generally talking not about, like, imagine a race course with a start and a finish line, with the finish line being orgasm. The idea is not to slam on the brakes before you get to the orgasm, but to slow things down to the point to where you're
in a continuous state of ecstasy.
Yeah, in a continuous state of almost crossing the line.
Yeah. So here's the thing. In the West, tantra really becomes synonymous with sexual debauchery. And this is where Broad, in his book, says tantra reaches a nadir with an alleged cannibal sect of yogis, the Aghori, who, quote, ate the flesh of human skulls, drank urine and liquor from human souls, lived in cremation grounds and dunghills, and defiled all social conventions, supposedly to court public disapproval as tests of humility.
And none of those things are wrong in and of themselves. But, I mean, drinking urine, drinking liquor, even drinking from human skulls. I mean, that's, you see these things occur in various traditions.
Well, the problem is that India in the 1920s starts to realize that, they have a political agenda, right? They want to become independent. They want to rise up. So they can't really have this whole, like, cannibalist yoga sect representing them, because what's coming out of India, one of the exports we see is this idea of yoga.
Yeah.
So it sort of gets this history of the sexuality, particularly, gets whitewashed, because you have Indian nationalists like Gunang, we talked about. This is someone who really started to try to research yoga in earnest in the 1920s. And he began to distinguish Hatha yoga from Tantra, sanitizing yoga's association with its roots in Tantra.
But the interesting thing here is that you end up engaging in a duality of, oh, there's the good there's the good yoga and then there's the bad yoga. It's like here's the law-abiding yoga and here's the rogue yoga. But
and actually, when we talk about the rogue yoga too, we're talking about something called Kundalini. So when we talk about tantric yoga or tantra, this is one of the branches, Kundalini, that is practiced today, although as far as I've never been to some sort of orgiastic class in it, I've just been, we've talked about the metaphors of the snake and the energy coiling up through the spine.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when you look into, like, why are they engaging? Why would a tantric yoga practitioner engage in the consumption of these five M's? And, you know, what does it all get down to aside from just this, you know, idea of, well, let's use sexual sensation, a body sensation to you know, channel the spirit. It's this idea, too, that you have these things that are forbidden, that are taboo, right? So you're human. These temptations are going to be there. These things are there in your life. So you can either run from them and try to deny them, or you can take them and try to do something spiritually beneficial with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it, taking these negatives or potential negatives and spinning them into a spiritual positive.
Then so you're saying within the Hindu tradition that not one thing is entirely good or bad. Everything, everyone contains both.
Yeah, because on one level, again, the direction of otherwise dangerous desires into acts of devotion. And then there's this idea, too, that it awakens participants to the non-duality of the world. Okay? The idea, there's this important idea in Hinduism that the world is a single, indivisible reality known as Brahman. And to see it, and to see the world as anything else than that, to see it as anything that's divided and composed of parts, is illusion. And you want to see through that illusion and see that and glimpse and understand, experience the reality of Brahman. So if you see the world as, oh, lemonade's good and wine's bad, you know, or not, no sex is great and sex is bad and destructive, then you're seeing a divided vision of the world and you're not glimpsing Brahman.
Or even yoga, yoke, right? The
yeah.
union of
yeah,
these
it's about,
two aspects.
It's about union. It's not about division. So I find that very fascinating.
No, I think it's a wonderful context to talk about this. We should take a break. When we get back, we're going to get down to the science of sex and yoga,
mm-hmm.
Or as I like to call it, the yoga beast with two backs.
Yes. So go into pigeon pose, listen to this message, and when we get back, we'll continue.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. You can come out of pigeon and go back into child's pose. So let's continue. We've covered a lot of ground already, talking about the roots of yoga, the basics of Hinduism, Tantra, the five M's, why you should do them, what spiritual good they can do in the long run.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Kundalini for a second, because we talked about this. We talked about Tantra, its role in Tantra, mm-hmm. this idea of the snake coiling at the base of the spine, this energy that rises up. And actually, Kundalini is Sanskrit for coiled, or she who is coiled. And it really is a metaphor of rebirth because of the snake's ability to shed its own skin, right? And it has a high status in Hinduism. But I wanted to mention that Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung was really intrigued by Kundalini, and he wrote of a 25-year-old woman whose symptoms included a wave of physical turmoil that rose from her perineum, mm-hmm. what'd you call it, the taint?
Taint.
To her uterus, to her bladder, and then eventually to the crown of her head. Okay, this is classic Kundalini imagery right here. And so he found it really curious that instead of her fearing what was happening, these physical manifestations, she actually really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And he came to understand it, though, in terms of an induced psychotic state. He thought of it as a very destructive force. And, in fact, if you ever pick up or thumb through his book called The Red Book, which is a bunch of illustrations by him, mm-hmm. But of his dreams, you'll see the snake in there as this sort of destroyer or this menacing symbolism in his own dreams. But I wanted to bring that up because it's so close to what we've talked about before, and it's this idea of thinking off. We've discussed this in the Female Orgasm podcast, but it was called The Orgasm Wars.
Yes.
And we talked about this woman named Barbara Corellis, who claimed to have trained herself to climax on demand, okay, without any sort of stimulation. And she's been thinking herself off for a number of years, and she actually demonstrated her ability to do this when she went into an MRI, and then she came to climax several times while researchers at Rutgers University studied her brain patterns, and they saw indeed that it was matching the types of brain patterns that you see in orgasms, people who actually have had sex with each other and undergo MRI at the same time. Seems a little awkward, but so I bring this up because William J. Broad also talks about thinking off, but he also talks about this idea that the same thing is sometimes happening in yoga practitioners' brains, particularly when they're meditating.
And meditation and yoga, of course, go hand in hand.
Yeah, and he talks about the Ananda Marga sect, which was studied by James C. Corby. This is a sect of yoga practitioners, and they underwent this study at Stanford University, and he had a control group of non-practitioners all meditate, and then he had the Ananda Marga sect also meditating. And just so you know, Ananda Marga, totally hardcore. We're talking about 3.5 hour long meditation sessions daily, very rigorous. So what happened is that they had both of the groups, they had them relax for 20 minutes, and then they had them give some attention to their breathing for 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes just for straight up meditation. So the cool thing about this is that the control group, they show all sorts of signs of your classic relaxation, right? For instance, their blood pressure drops. But our friends over here, the our yogis, all sorts of crazy things are happening with them. They're breathing really rapidly. They begin to sweat. What they're seeing, the researchers realize, is this autonomous arousal, very much the same sort of thing that you would see with someone who is approaching an orgasm. In fact, one of the participants had a heartbeat of 120 beats per minute, which Broad says is very similar to frenzied lovers.
Oh.
Yeah. So there is an idea that through meditation, but also through yoga, like poses like cobra, in which your pelvic region is on the floor, you place a lot of pressure there, that this is stimulating certain hormones in the body, and you begin to get this benefit of, I guess you could say, I don't want to say a love cocktail of hormones surging through your body, but there's direct evidence that this can actually increase your libido.
And there are certain poses too, right, that have mm-hmm. That have been shown to have a more of a link to the sexual side of yoga, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, cobra, as I said, bow pose is another one.
And what now? Cobra, for those that don't know, this is one where it's like you're lying on your stomach.
Yeah.
And you get your hands to the side here, and then you sort of the front of you, your torso sort of rises up like a snake.
Yeah, your hands on your sides, and they're pushing your upper torso up, and so you are putting a lot of pressure in your pelvic region. But what they're also finding is that one of the hormones that is ticking up quite a bit is testosterone. And, in men and women. And in mm-hmm. fact, in one study, they saw a woman's testosterone, go up by 55%. And this is incredible because heretofore they had decided that yoga was lowering men's testosterone level. And this was based on a study in which it wasn't, yoga that was lowering the testosterone level. It was this vegetarian diet that the practitioners were on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they had a bunch of soy in their diet and that was lowering the testosterone. So that's sort of a myth that Broad busts here and says, no, like this testosterone can actually increase your libido as well for both men and women. So I also wanted to mention to you that Broad says there's a clinical study of more than 100 men and women who self-report their sex lives before and after they undertook yoga in the study. And across the board, they all reported increased arousal, better orgasms, and more overall satisfaction. So one of the things I do want to point out that Broad points out is that when they are conducting these studies and this research, they're very aware of creating really good, solid studies, at least now in trying to study this in earnest. And what I mean by that is that they're looking at all the different ways in which people practice yoga and their habits. And kind of, just like any sort of study, you want to get a good rate of participation from people who are healthy, who, you know, are not, you know, 24/7 yoga practitioners so that they sway the results. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get this idea, this baseline of like, okay, if average Joe walks into a yoga class, what does that mean in terms of average Joe's or average Jill's sexual proclivity down the road? And so this is really interesting data that's coming from this. And then he does admit that there's not a ton of it. Again, there's not people who have said, oh, hey, we can solve this whole Viagra thing with just doing yoga. You know, I mean, that's not the claim that he's saying, but he is pointing to a body of mounting evidence that yoga very well could be a sort of nature's Viagra.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I also found it interesting. In his book, William J. Broad goes into the sexual aspects of yoga by discussing various sex scandals that have arisen with yoga gurus. And the main ones he was talking about are some of the earlier U.S. dudes who had large followings. Generally, we're talking like guys in their 50s, 60s, and suddenly there are all these charges that they have behaved inappropriately with young women or even not-so-young women under their charge.
Well, and Broad's point is like 50s, 60s. I mean, yeah, okay, first of all, there's this whole other issue of power structure and taking advantage of someone.
Yeah.
But also, like, 50s, 60s, these dudes aren't taking Viagra. Like, there's a certain vitality here that he's saying that plays into, practicing yoga.
Yeah. And you do see, I mean, actually, there have been recent scandals involving yoga gurus as well. But, you can't look at it just as, yoga is this sexualizing thing and it just turns men into monsters.
Well, there have been some female gurus that there have been charges against who say that they are taking advantage of their position in order to gain lovers and sexual encounters. But I mean,
that's what especially men do. I mean, it's like the President Clinton thing. all over again. You put a man in a position of power, and you put these, you know, impressionable young women in his charge, especially if you have a mystic aspect there, which is largely unavoidable in a yoga setting.
Well, I think the problem is when your guru is saying that, you know, you should practice abstinence, is not doing the same.
Yeah.
So that's really what the issue is here.
Yes, yeah.
People will say, well, you know, that's horribly hypocritical of you. But, I mean, even the Maharishi, John Lennon, said that the Rosemary's Baby, Mia Farrow, that he had tried to molest her. And so they actually, that was one of the reasons why they broke away from the Maharishi.
Huh.
Because they were like, dude, you're full of it.
And being full of it is very, again, very in touch with some of the roots of yoga, because as we discussed in the other podcast, you go back in time and look at the roots of yoga, and you find a lot of a fair amount of deception, of charlatanism at times. I mean,
yeah.
Outrageous claims that yoga can make you live forever, that it can defeat evil, it can cure diseases, things that simply aren't so within the confines of scientific reality.
What I think is interesting, though, is this again, when I say this mounting evidence, this data that yoga can inform a person's sexual identity, even. Like, mm-hmm. there are some claims of neo-tantrics that Broad talks about. This idea that people may begin to have an alternative sexuality, where
so
thinking
like
off
a,
becomes the norm.
So it becomes kind of like an asexuality that is inward looking. I mean, oh, it's not
it's
even
this,
an asexuality.
I mean,
it's just
mental
this new
masturbation,
thing. Yeah.
Really.
Huh.
That's really sort of taking it down to a notch that it probably doesn't deserve, but that's, or maybe it does, but that's sort of what we're talking about here. A certain asexuality.
Like
about
a, like more like a psycho masturbation, really. Like, think of it in terms of like.
Not psycho.
No,
but
no,
psycho.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. There you have it. There's a nice little intro into the. Into the sexual magical past of
cannibalistic,
of yoga.
Cannibalistic yoga past.
Now, if you're sitting there wondering, you're like, whoa, I turned into this episode that was going to have tantra in it, and you didn't give me a single tip for tantric sex.
We're not going to do that.
We're not going to do it. But you are in luck, because if you go to How Stuff Works and you type in tantra or tantric mm-hmm. into the search bar, you will find a Discovery Health article written by the staff of Discovery Health that goes into some of the
specifics
of modern tantric recommendations. Like mm-hmm. they're not really telling you like how what order to eat your fish and meat and wine or any of that.
Right.
But some recommendations. And
they talk about the slap and tickle, and one of them at least yeah. the definition.
Well,
of
some tantric. Of the things they talk about are very sort of straightforward. Kind of more, you know, like some of the tips are based in like bring some eroticism into your sex life, or
light a candle,
look into her eyes, that kind of thing, and where you're kind of like, that doesn't really seem all that mystical. That's just kind of, but I mean, to some people that's new information.
No,
so,
but there yeah. is one that I believe it's the Discovery Health. If you put tantra in there, it actually talks about the mechanics of it.
Okay. Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
when we were talking about. Drawing out the ecstasy part of it. That's,
yeah.
That gives
and it gets
specifics
into,
on.
It gets into breathing, and it gets into this idea. Again, yoga means yoke and union. And so when you take these yoga, these yoga principles into the bedroom, you're dealing with a situation of people coming together, being aware of their own breaths and their own bodies and what they're doing, and then using that information to slow things down as they approach the precipice of orgasm.
The jouissance.
What's that? Oh, the little death?
Little death and jouissance is ecstasy, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just being French fancy.
Yeah. So look that up if you want some more information on that. If you want to know more about the science of yoga, check and also if you want to hear more just about Julie and I's thoughts on yoga and I'll check out the other episode that we did called The Science of Down Dog. Check out the book The Science of Yoga by William J. Broad. It's excellent. We can't recommend that highly enough. And if you want to know a little more about Hindu tradition, there's a great book by Mark W. Muse, that's M-U-E-S-S-E, called The Hindu Traditions, A Concise Introduction. And it's just a really good, like, well laid out, illustrated guide to generally what Hindu ritual consists of. It's a great book. I highly recommend that as well. So let's call the robot over here. All right. A listener by the name of Peter writes in and says, "Hello, Robert and Julie. Was just listening to your podcast about life in microgravity. One thing that got me thinking was the off-topic comment about sourdough. How did we end up talking about sourdough and
microgravity? We talked about how people living off Earth would only visit us when they needed to come back and get genetic material, and that we would be like the sourdough bread in San Francisco that provides the mother dough for sourdough bread.
Okay.
That was the analogy, at least.
Well, Peter goes on, he says, a sourdough mother can be simply created by mixing flour and water in a bowl and letting natural yeasts in the atmosphere start the fermentation. As this can take a while, most breadmasters keep the original pot alive by simply adding more flour and water to the bowl once they have removed enough for the current batch of bread. Enjoying listening to your podcast as I am having to lie flat with my eyes pointed at the floor to aid my detached retina to recover. Share and enjoy, Peter. Who's in Plymouth, UK?
Yeah, I feel like I saw an article on some sort of service, like if you can't soup up your bread or feed it, someone will for you. I don't...
Like they'll babysit your mother?
Mother bread.
All right, we also heard from Zach. Zach writes in and says, "Hi, I just finished listening to your Planetary Internet episode and had some thoughts on the speed of light delay, specifically in sci-fi. In the majority of sci-fi I have watched or read that deals with interstellar travel neglects interstellar communications in that they are either not a major plot point or are magically instantaneous." His example, Ender's Game. And then he goes on to say, "One series where this is addressed, however, is Dune. In the Dune universe, a large number of communications are carried out by actual physical messengers riding on starships and delivering the message directly. These were the best examples of communication in sci-fi that I could think of. Thanks for the great podcast." I'd forgotten about that detail from the Dune universe, but they didn't have the means to actually send the data, but they had the means to send the ships, so they just include an actual courier on board. We also heard from listener Jim. Jim writes in and says, and he's referring to the zero-G episode, microgravity, and talking about movies with zero-G in space. He says, "Robert and Julie, you mentioned that 2001 was the only space movie that you knew of that maintained zero-G. I thought of three more. 2010, a sequel to 2001, well, it's kind of obvious now, I guess, had zero-G as well, but there are some scenes where it's not quite obvious whether you're in part of the ship that's zero-G or using rotational gravity. Apollo 13 had zero-G for historical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They built a set on the Vomit Comet and filmed several scenes in actual zero-G. I heard the stars say that they spent a lot of time on the ends of the booms being moved around to simulate visual zero-G drift. In close-ups, they just sway back and forth." So, yeah, I kind of forgot about Apollo 13 since it's so historically based. Mission to Mars maintains zero-G as well. They even fluff out the female star's hair as it would happen in zero-G. And I legitimately forgot about that one. And then he goes on to say, "I'm guessing studios avoid zero-G because it has to be very expensive and complicated to film it convincingly, assuming artificial gravity has got to solve a lot of logistical problems." There are a few there that I had forgotten about.
Yeah, that just made me realize how surreal it must be to be an actor sometimes. Like, okay, I'm going to deliver my lines, but I'm going to sway back and forth just very slightly.
In front of a green screen.
In front of a green screen.
Talking to a puppet that's not a puppet that'll be added with CGI later, but right now it's just a stick with the word alien written on it.
Yeah, that I have to, in my mind, imagine this monster with vagina dentata coming at me.
You know, I actually rewatched part of 2001 A Space Odyssey last week, and it's kind of heartbreaking because on one level, this is a vision of the 21st century, but it's not the 21st century that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful and stunning. And then the other side is we don't actually make movies like this in the 21st century either.
Yeah.
So I was kind of torn as to which was sadder. Like, the scenes with the monkeys in 2001, those are the best scenes I've seen in cinema that features monkeys. Like, and I'm counting real monkeys. Like, it's better than any film with Clint Eastwood or, you know, anything that featured actual acting chimps. Better than that. Better than anything I've seen with CGI monkeys. And they're the best monkey costumes ever employed in a motion picture. Like, those scenes are just fabulous. They're perfect. And just the visual panache of that film is just wondrous.
It is. I'm sorry. It is It is. You just brought up the Clint Eastwood, and now I'm imagining him in a truck going down the highway with his friend.
They should have just used one of those suits. I mean, it just... I could go on and on. Anyway.
Yeah. Actually, there was some really good Facebook discussion on this topic. So.
Yeah, I brought it up on Facebook yesterday. And, anyway, if you haven't seen 2001, do yourself a favor, because it's great. Anyway, at that point, we should probably move on and close out this podcast. So.
I know, and I just want to say namaste.
Namaste, yeah.
Yeah.
But we do have to keep talking, though.
I know.
We also have to point out that, hey, you can get in touch with us. You can join in on Facebook conversations with us about how awesome 2001 is or what kind of yoga you prefer. You can find us on Facebook. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. You can find us on Twitter, where we are Blow the Mind. And definitely, we would love to hear from any of you guys that are yoga practitioners. Let us know what effect it's had on your life. If you are not a yoga practitioner and you're trying it out or you're new to it or you're interested in giving it a go, we'd love to hear from you about that topic as well.
Yeah, and also would love to know if anybody's ever had any like huge breakthroughs or revelations or even like some, you know, sort of surreal thoughts in Shavasana at the end when they're resting, because that's a great fertile time for the mind. So
I have Shavasana visions fairly regularly. I forget there's actually a term for it for those visions, but I can't remember what they are.
Yes, very cool stuff. So it kind of reminds me of lucid dreaming in a way. You can also send us your thoughts via email, and you can do that at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.